The recession has been good for one business, community colleges, which are cheaper than four-year schools. So enrollments are soaring, but their funding is not. NPR's Greg Allen reports that may lead to a lot of disappointed students this fall.
The fall session is still weeks away, but you wouldn't know it from the activity at the registration and admissions office on the campus at Miami-Dade College. At 7 a.m., an hour before opening, students are lined up waiting to enroll and sign up for classes. Administrators say there are more students looking to attend this fall than they've ever seen before. In large part, it's because of the economy. Many who are out of work are seeking to improve their education so they can get better jobs. There are also students who, in better times, may have gone to college at higher-priced institutions. Julio Tortone is an incoming freshman who was accepted at the University of Miami, where tuition and fees are over $42,000 a year.
The reason I'm registering here is because there's no money, you know? I just registered right now. Hopefully, you know, I'll get the classes I want. I registered for the fall term. So we'll see how it goes, but I've noticed that the line is getting bigger and bigger every day, seriously.
The bottom line, tuition and fees here at Miami-Dade College total just over $1,000 per term for Florida residents. Across the country, educators at community colleges say they've often seen enrollments surge in times of economic slowdown. The size of this spike, however, is unprecedented, and it comes at a time when budgets are severely limited. Dulce Beltran is the registrar at Miami-Dade College.
As it stands right now, we have almost 39,000 students registered for the fall term, and we began fall registration only 2 weeks ago. And a quarter of the courses are already closed, with almost 2 months to go before fall term begins.
Enrollment is running nearly 60% ahead of last year's pace. Miami-Dade College has scrambled to hire instructors and add courses. At the same time, administrators have cut costs elsewhere and increased class sizes. Even so, Beltran estimates that 20,000 or 30,000 students won't get all the classes they need. 5,000 may not be able to sign up for any classes in the fall. With 80,000 students receiving college credit, Miami-Dade is the nation's largest community college, so the numbers here are extreme. But across the country, it's a rare institution that's not in a similar situation. At Broward College near Fort Lauderdale, administrators say they can't add enough freshman introductory courses to meet demand. Second-year student Wally Honorit says it's also hard to get a place in lab courses, such as the anatomy class he's taking for his physical therapy degree.
The first day I came in there, I think I was maybe 10 minutes early. I walked in the class was full. I'm the last person in the back right next to the door in the trash can. So it was like, man, you know, that was what's going on. You know, it's real competitive to even get a seat now.
At another time, surging enrollment might be seen as a boon. This spike, however, comes as state and local governments are steadily cutting their financial support for community colleges. A decade ago in Florida, the state legislature provided more than three-quarters of the operating budgets at community colleges. It's now dropped to about 50%, and Broward College President David Armstrong says even that support is shaky.
In the last 3 years, our state support has declined 22%, about $18 million.
To help make up that gap, Broward College raised tuition this year by 8%. Armstrong says he's hopeful that as the economy improves, Florida will restore the funding it's cut.
We'll have years to climb back out of this hole that has been dug in the budget, though, and the state is facing many other issues that compete with our needs in community colleges, universities and K-12. There's health issues and all the prisons and all the other things that the state has to budget.
It's a similar story in California, Arizona, and according to Norma Kent of the American Association of Community Colleges, at almost every one of the group's 1,200 member schools.
The state of Washington, for example, has experienced the highest budget cut for the community colleges that they've ever had. The state of California is in a very dire straits that you hear about every day, and they've projected they may turn away as many as 200,000 students this year.
Making matters worse here in Florida is that because of budget cuts, the state's 11 public universities have imposed caps on freshman enrollment. That's not possible at community colleges, where an open-door policy allows admission of anyone with a high school diploma or a GED. In Florida, California, and many other states, that open-door policy is now taking a beating, as thousands of students are being shut out of classes and potentially careers. Greg Allen, NPR News, Miami.
As the Obama administration attempts its health care overhaul, a new face of the uninsured is emerging: middle-income Americans. These are people who have lost their jobs and their health coverage because of the recession. Austin Jenkins of the Northwest News Network has this profile of one woman from the Seattle area. For the first time in her life, she's turning to a community health clinic for help.
Good morning, Health Point. This is Carlin. May I help you?
At the Health Point Dental Clinic in Redmond, Washington, Deborah Yovanes sits in the waiting room. She's here to get a couple of cavities filled. She discovered Health Point last winter when she got sick and needed a doctor.
I am at Health Point because I do not have insurance coverage, and Health Point provide a sliding scale where, based on your income, you pay accordingly.
At age 53, for the first time in her adult life, Yovanes is uninsured. During the height of the real estate boom, Yovanes was working as a mortgage loan officer and made as much as $7,000 a month. Today, she's unemployed.
Good morning.
Soon, Yovanes is in the dental chair.
Just do the right side then.
Okay.
Since that one's bothering you, you do have one.
While Yovanes gets her cavities filled, I go next door to Health Point's medical clinic to meet Dr. Kim McDermott.
I am a pediatrician, and I've worked here for almost 15 years.
Dr. McDermott says never in her career has she seen such a demand from people like Deborah Yovanes for the sliding fee medical care her clinic provides.
More patients who I would consider middle class are coming, and we didn't used to see that. We're more a safety net for the, you know, the poorest families in our state, but lately I have seen more and more patients who, you know, had insurance and have lost it. So a different demographic of patient than we used to see.
In fact, over the past year, Health Point reports a 27% jump in requests for appointments at its 7 community health clinics in the Puget Sound region. Harder to come by are up-to-date national statistics on how the current economic crisis is swelling the ranks of the uninsured. The most recent figures from 2007 showed nearly 46 million Americans lacked coverage. But everybody in the healthcare field expects those numbers to be up significantly when new data is released this fall. One figure that can be tracked, though, is visits to emergency rooms. According to the American Hospital Association, 6 in 10 hospitals report an uptick in uninsured visits to the ER.
We began seeing our first changes as early as October and November of this past year.
Janice Spiso is with University of Washington Medicine, which includes Seattle's Harborview Medical Center, a regional trauma center. Besides more charity care cases, Spiso says UW Medicine is noticing another trend line.
One of the things we have seen is people delaying more of what we sometimes in the healthcare industry call elective surgery, and it's really not elective, it's scheduled surgeries. So things that they need to have done but aren't a crisis. We're seeing people delaying that if they've lost their insurance.
More than half the nation's hospitals are reporting this trend.
Well, we have you down.
Back at the Health Point Dental Clinic in Redmond, Washington, Deborah Yovanes stops at the billing desk after her appointment.
I know that you don't have any insurance. Can you make a payment for today's visit?
Can I pay like $20 today?
Sure, not a problem.
For NPR News, I'm Austin Jenkins in Olympia, Washington.
This is Morning Edition from NPR News. Good morning. I'm Renee Montaigne.
And I'm Steve Inskeep. Here's the dilemma for President Obama. Critics say his economic stimulus is not doing enough, but it is not clear that lawmakers want the president to do more.
Yesterday, Vice President Joe Biden said everyone, quote, misread how bad the economy was. President Obama quickly corrected that and said he wouldn't do anything differently. The administration has backed away from suggestions for a second big economic stimulus plan. But unemployment is still rising, and political pressure is rising with it. In a moment, we'll talk with a Democratic senator from the economically troubled state of Ohio. We begin with David Wessel of the Wall Street Journal. Good morning.
Good morning, Renee.
Does a 9.5% unemployment rate mean the stimulus is not working?
No, but it's hard to declare it a rousing success. Most economists think things would have been even worse without the stimulus, but a lot of the early tax cuts have been saved by people rather than spent. That's good for them, doesn't help the economy. And a lot of the spending in the bill was so stretched out that it hasn't hit the economy yet, so the benefits haven't been felt.
And the case for more stimulus?
Well, there's still plenty of this first stimulus in the pipeline, but the recession looks much worse than it was when the Obama team arrived in Washington, especially in the job market. We see now that the stock market is weakening, state governments are cutting back, and that's offsetting the efforts of the federal government. The typical economist forecast is for very little improvement in the job market for another year or 18 months. There's lots of unused capacity out there, empty shopping centers, unused factories. So the economic case is that we ought to start laying the groundwork now for stimulus that would hit the economy sometime next year when the current one starts to wear off, perhaps something aimed specifically at bolstering employment, because the economy looks like it's going to be weak for a very long time.
But you just said that there's a lot of money still left in the stimulus pipeline. I mean, how does that figure into the thinking? If there's money there, spend it and then see what happens, some people would say.
Absolutely. That's what makes this kind of a little bit hard to figure out. You don't want to do more stimulus if the stimulus you did still hasn't begun to help the patient. But there is some thinking that even what's in the pipeline isn't enough to get the economy close to what most economists would consider full employment, which is an unemployment rate closer to 5% than the 9.5% we have now.
Now, the administration has backed away at the moment from talk of a second big economic stimulus package. But what are the chances that such a thing would be proposed and that Congress would pass it?
I think there's very little chance it'll be proposed now or passed now. There's a lot of reluctance. One is what we've been talking about. There's a lot in the pipeline. You need patience. Secondly, there's a lot more talk now about the budget deficit. The more the government spends now, the more it borrows, the more we'll have to pay it back later. If the markets or our foreign lenders get uneasy about the amount that we're borrowing, they could push up interest rates, and that could hurt the economy at the same time that stimulus was supposed to be helping with it. And also, I think there's getting to be a kind of a bad political odor about stimulus. Washington Post ABC News poll showed that fewer people think the stimulus package has succeeded. That makes it hard for Congress to do more. And it begins to look like it was a big spending program doing a lot of other things besides stimulating the economy. So I think right now, the politicians are saying, let's wait, even though some economists are saying, don't wait.
David, thanks very much.
A pleasure.
David Wessel is economics editor at The Wall Street Journal.
For the past year, billionaire oil man T. Boone Pickens has spent $60 million advertising his plan to combat America's addiction to foreign oil. He launched the campaign last year with this ad.
I'm T. Boone Pickens. I've been an oil man my whole life, but this is one emergency we can't drill our way out of. And I have a plan.
As part of that plan, Pickens invested $2 billion in wind turbines to create the world's largest wind farm in Texas. Well, yesterday he postponed that project, and today he's on Capitol Hill talking about energy independence. You spent a lot of money trying to convince the country that we need wind energy. Why the postponement? What went wrong?
Well, one, and I do too, we're in a tough credit market right now. So financing that is not easy. But I don't start receiving turbines till the first quarter of 2011. So I'll have the financing to go ahead and build the project out by 2011. Second, we do not get transmission in there. We thought we could do it ourselves. We can't. And so we won't have transmission available to us until 2013. So it'll all fit together. We'll just be a couple of years behind schedule.
When you say you need transmission, somebody has to build a couple of $1 billion worth of transmission lines to a wind farm to make the energy transmissible into the grid.
That's right, and that'll be done by ERCOT CREZ in Texas. That's all been money appropriated for that.
So you're confident that you're on the hook for lots of wind turbines. They're not going to go to Texas now, but they're all going to be put to use?
No question. I have to put them to use.
To what extent do you think the inability to come up with that transmission money right away, to what extent does it reflect the fact that petroleum is cheaper now than it was a year ago, and the sense of urgency is gone?
No, it hasn't gone, because you're still importing as much oil this year as you did last year. It's about 70% of your oil is foreign oil. So that hasn't changed. The price is cheaper, so the pain is less. But the security issue is still number one. Can you imagine importing almost 70% of your oil from foreign countries, and over half of that oil is coming from countries that really are not friendly to us? They hate us. And so we've got to get it fixed. And that's what I'm working on. Now, the way to fix it is to go to the one and only resource we have in America that will replace foreign oil, which is natural gas. and we have an abundance of natural gas. It's cheaper, it's cleaner by 50% than oil, and it's available to us. And that's what we're going to do. And we will have a plan, I think, by the end of the August recess, we will have a plan that will go a long way to solving the dependency issue for foreign oil.
I want to come back to natural gas in a second, but first just on wind. The facts of our dependence on foreign oil haven't changed, but you don't sense any less concern about this by the public now that the price at the pump has come down by so much.
Well, do you want to have foreign oil? Of course
No. I mean, nobody wants it, but nobody seems to care as much when the price
is rising. They do care. You're still dependent on the same amount of oil today from unfriendly countries as you were last year, and it'll get worse as you go forward. So, yeah, the American people, I'm in good contact with them. They want the dependency issue fixed. And I think this Congress knows that very well, and I think the President of the United States is on that course.
Do you think that advertising money paid off, the money that you've spent on ads urging wind energy?
I think I got my money's worth.
But we don't have the wind farm yet.
Oh, we're going to get it. Don't worry, because the people in America want renewables. And that was all in the climate bill that passed last week in the House. It still has to be worked out with the Senate. But that bill, it has the renewables in there, the wind, the solar, and the 21st century grid for the United States. All those have to be done.
Well, Boone Pickens, thank you very much for talking with us.
You bet, Robert. Thank you.
So, oil man T. Boone Pickens speaking to us from Capitol Hill.